If you've been listening for a while, you may know that both of my parents were entrepreneurs. And one of the best lessons I ever learned from my dad, who's been an entrepreneur since the 80s, so over 40 years, is that you have to learn to fire yourself from every other job in your business. Now, this is something that can be quite challenging because when we started our businesses, we had to learn how to do all the things. We were the bookkeeper and the assistant and the marketer and. But as you start to grow your team, as you start to have more and more people involved in your business, you can also become the bottleneck if you do not learn how to fire yourself and truly stay in your lane as the CEO. But what if you're not clear about what your lane is? Because after all, you used to do all of the jobs. Well, in this episode, we are going to talk about how to redefine your role as the CEO of your business, one of the most important exercises any entrepreneur can do, especially if you are in a growth stage, you have more people coming on to work with you, and you want to make sure that you are clearing the path for them instead of getting in everyone's way. Let's dive in. Are you ready to grow from solopreneur to CEO? You're in the right place. I'm your host, Rachel Cook, and I've spent the last decade helping women entrepreneurs start and scale service-based businesses. If you're serious about building a sustainable business, it's time to put the strategy, systems, and support in place to make it happen. Join me each week for candid conversations about stepping into your role as CEO, the hard lessons learned along the way, and practical, profitable strategies to grow a sustainable business without the hustle and burnout. Hey there, CEOs. Welcome to this episode. We're kicking off an entirely new series as we ramp up towards the fall. I wanted to talk about how we can become more productive in our role as CEO, how we can stay more focused in our role as CEO. And of course, this means letting you know that the Fired Up and Focused Challenge is coming back. It has been a minute or a few years since we have refreshed this challenge. And this is one of my favorite things to share with you. The Fired Up and Focused Challenge is, I want to say, almost 10 years old now. It has been a challenge. It has been a podcast. It has been a book. It has been so many different types of content, but I specifically wanted to upgrade it for entrepreneurs like you who are promoting yourself to CEO, who are trying to focus in on the highest value tasks in your business, the ones that are the growth-oriented tasks in your business. How do you make time for those? How do you make sure you are staying in your role as CEO instead of really backpedaling, backsliding into being the jack of all trades that had to do everything to get your business off the ground? Well, if you want to join us, the Fired Up and Focused Challenge is coming in August. It will be kicking off on August 8th live, and would love to have you. You can get all the details at firedupandfocused.com. As we gear up for that, the next few episodes, I want to give you some strategies, some insights into how you can learn to level up your productivity by truly embracing what it means to be the CEO of your business. And that starts with defining, what does that mean? What does that mean for you as the CEO? As entrepreneurs, when we get started, we are doing all the things. We are the CEO, the marketing team, the sales department, customer service, operations, tech support, bookkeeping. We are doing everything to get the business off the ground. But over time, as our business gets more established, as it gets out of that startup stage, we begin putting some systems in place to streamline our workflows. We're able to automate some tasks. We're able to outsource or hire support. We start growing. And as we start growing, that workload shifts off of our plate onto the plates of the people who are now part of our team. And this is essential if we are going to continue to focus on the higher value, higher ROI tasks that need to happen in order to continue to grow our business. Now, this challenge can show up because it is hard. This is a transition that we all face, right? So not only are we facing a big mindset shift in the way that you look at yourself, the way that you look at your role in your business, there's also a lot of tactical things you have to figure out as you are navigating this shift. As we are looking at taking things off of our to-do list and passing it off to other people. And we want to make sure that you are not becoming a bottleneck in your business. Every time I have slowed down the growth of my business, it has always been because I've become the bottleneck and I haven't stayed in my lane as the CEO. And I feel like we all go through this when we get into a growth stage because growth pushes us out of our comfort zone. Growth pushes us into the growth zone. It is emotionally uncomfortable. We're often making ourselves more and more visible or making ourselves more and more vulnerable. It is really uncomfortable for a lot of us. But if we have a big mission, we have to get ready for that. So this is a stage of growth that can feel overwhelming. And when we are in this stage, we have to remember that anyone who has gone through this journey of building something bigger than just you, they've all gone through this too. And it's really easy to self-sabotage and default back to playing smaller, to doing the maintenance level work, the busy work, instead of the harder, more uncomfortable, more vulnerable growth work that we need to do as the CEO. So whenever I'm thinking about this, I'm always looking towards people who inspire me. I'm always looking to people who have walked down this path before so that I can get insight into what they did, how they learned how to not get in their own way. And someone who really inspires me is Sarah Blakely, the founder of Spanx. I'm so inspired by her. I just think she's incredible. And she shared a post not too long ago. I'll actually reshare it in the show notes, where she talked about, you know, the beginning startup stages of Spanx. She would have the Spanx delivered, shipped to her apartment door. And when the UPS guy showed up, they would stack boxes and boxes and boxes of all the Spanx from the manufacturing company in front of the front door to her apartment. And she was living in a smaller two-bedroom apartment. And she would get home from her day job where she was selling fax machines. That was her job while she was building Spanx on the side. And she would actually have to move, physically move boxes away from the front door because they were stacked over the front door, almost to the roof line, so that she could get into the apartment. In the second bedroom of her apartment, that was her shipping and distribution center, where she would literally take all the Spanx that had been shipped to her from the manufacturer, and then she would repackage them and start to ship them out. And that was the beginning stages of her business, right? She was wearing all the hats. It took a ton of time and energy. It was a side dream that she was going after all by herself. But as she could, she knew she needed to focus on where she could provide the most value for her business. So she didn't stay in that two-bedroom apartment saying to herself, well, I have to be one to pack every single box, right? She knew she couldn't be the shipping and distribution center for the rest of time for Spanx. She knew that they wouldn't get very big or go very far if she was the one trying to do it herself. She needed someone to take that off her plate. She found a shipping partner. She found a way to get distribution out of her house. She didn't continue the operations of running her business and manufacturing on her own. She let someone take that off her plate. And she realized her highest and best value that she could contribute to her company, to Spanx, was landing the deals, was pitching herself to Oprah so that she could become part of the favorite things list, right? The Oprah favorite things list. She knew that pitching herself and getting in front of buyers for department stores was where she had the highest and best value. She has a famous story of how she got her foot in the door to Neiman Marcus, where she was going to all these buyers and she was trying to explain what she was doing with Spanx. And finally, she took the arm of the buyer, took her into the woman's room along with her, and showed herself as the before and after. Her before she put on Spanx wearing a pair of white pants, and then after she put on Spanx and the white pants, and how much better it looked, how it solved the problem of any woman who was trying to wear white pants and didn't want the panty line or panties to show through, but still wanted the support, right? Wanted that modesty there. So she knew that that was her role. She had to be the person who was leading the way, who was the one bringing the passion to the pitch to get the deals for her business. The second picture she shared on her Instagram was so inspiring. It was literally seeing the before and the after of all of these UPS boxes posted or piled up to the roof line of her apartment, to seeing this huge warehouse where she has this entire team in place to distribute Spanx around the world. And of course, if you follow the story of Spanx, it went from being available only in department stores to having deals with Target. And now they're, I mean, literally all over. This was amazing, amazing company that started with $5,000, an idea, and somebody who knew that she didn't know how to make it herself. She had to outsource that. She could start shipping it herself, but she really needed to outsource that. But she knew her highest and best value to contribute to Spanx was her enthusiasm, her passion, her story, and going out there to be the face of the brand, to be the person who put the brand in front of the people who could help her get it in front of more potential clients and customers. So today I want to share with you a process to help you define your own role as CEO. Because just like Sarah Blakely, you do not need to do everything in your business. And in fact, if you try to do everything in your business and you try to have that death grip of control on your business as you're trying to also grow it, you are going to run into so many issues. Not only will you be the bottleneck, you'll likely really struggle to have a team who wants to be there with you because they'll feel like you can't trust them or that you don't trust them when you're micromanaging and trying to put, you know, yourself in the middle of everything. We don't want that, right? We need a team that is self-running, that is able to run without you having to interfere in the day-to-day. We need a team that doesn't need to be micromanaged because they know what the goals and objectives are. We need people who can fully support us getting this business out into the world. And that means we have to redefine our role. So when we are growing our business, what is the first thing we do as we're hiring people and building a team? We sit down and we write a job description. The first job description I ever wrote was for a virtual assistant because I knew I needed some customer service support. I needed someone to help me manage all of my clients. And when I started my business, we didn't have a lot of these amazing automation tools that would make it simple. A lot of it was still answering emails, making phone calls, going back and forth to schedule something, right? I needed someone who could be my behind the scenes, take care of all the details, make sure that any people who were reaching out about working with me could get on my calendar. Anybody who was working with me had, again, they were on my calendar. They were getting all the details of the program that they had signed up for. Somebody that could just make sure everything was running smoothly. And this is not my zone of genius, right? This was something that left me feeling overwhelmed or stressed out, logging into my email and seeing how many people I had to follow up with and how many times I had to go back and forth and schedule somebody, et cetera, et cetera. So this was an area where I identified this is the first area of support I need. I need somebody to manage my inbox, my calendar. I needed someone to make sure my clients had everything they needed. And having a job description, clearly, made it easier for me to find that person, to train that person, for them to know exactly what they were responsible for. But here's what I also noticed. As I did this with my first assistant and then my next assistant and then my operations director, I kept bringing people on into my business. I would find myself getting in everyone's way. What was going on? I realized I never stopped to rewrite my own job description. I was putting my fingers all over their work. I was getting all over their to-do list. I was wondering, you know, oh, should I check in the inbox? I'd open it up and suddenly I'd get a note from my assistant saying, hey, you shouldn't be in here. This is my job. I can reply to those emails. I was getting in their way and they were getting frustrated with me. And all of this came from me really honestly not having a clear picture of what my new role was now that those responsibilities were taken off my plate. So the idea of defining your own role as CEO, of creating your new job description, will help you stay more focused on the areas of your business that you need to focus on, given where you are right now, that no one else on your team can focus on, and will help you get the biggest ROI for your time and energy. So we want to make sure that each time you're bringing someone on your team and they're taking things off your plate, we need to reevaluate your role, your tasks, your to-do list, where you're putting your time and your energy. This will make it so much easier for you to stay focused and for you to get out of the way of your team. We have to get out of the way of the team. And if you're finding yourself like me, slowing down because you're getting in their way, it's really hard to admit that. It takes a lot of being humble to admit that you're getting in their way. But there's a few red flags here. If you are jumping into your inbox or you're trying to take on tasks that you've already assigned other people and you can tell they're getting frustrated, that's a red flag. You need to empower your team to tell you, hey, you're in my lane. Get back in your lane. This is how you can have that mutual respect and trust and know that everything is getting handled accordingly, right? And you also need to make sure, another red flag, if you're seeing people leave because they're just getting frustrated or you're feeling really frustrated with other people, often because there's additional communication challenges happening, that's a red flag. It just means no one's clear on who's supposed to do what, and they don't understand why you're micromanaging or why you're continuing to jump back into something that they thought they were supposed to take care of. These are problems that happen when we have not redefined our role. So how do we start? Well, when we're talking about being the CEO, literally, if you go on and Google CEO job description, the first job descriptions you're going to get are going to be more corporate traditional CEO descriptions. And that can be helpful. But as entrepreneurial CEOs of small businesses, I mean, most of us are running what is really considered a micro business. We have teams of, you know, maybe just a couple people, maybe under 10, under 20. We have a different role than a business that has hundreds of people, right? So we have to make sure we are clear on what our role as CEO looks like and how that's different. So let's start by talking about the CEO in the more traditional sense. And this is what probably a lot of us, if you go to business school, you're going to know about a CEO. A CEO of a more traditional, larger organization is someone who is at the very top of that entire organizational chart. They are the ones who are in charge. And that means, first and foremost, they've got to define the mission, the vision. They're defining where that business is headed. They're the ones saying, here's where we're going, everybody. Here's our goals. And everyone looks at them to be the person that is giving them the direction, setting the course for, you know, how everybody is aligning to go in that direction. Without that mission and vision, we really can't get all the people on the team in alignment about where they should be putting their time and energy. So that mission and vision really becomes kind of the North Star for the team to navigate against. Without it, it's really easy for the team to fall apart because no one understands what the priorities are. So the first thing that a traditional CEO would do is they define the mission for the company. What does this company stand for? What is the focus for this company? What is the vision? Where are we going? What are our goals? What are we trying to accomplish? You can literally Google how to create mission and vision statements. You'll find a ton of information, but I like to think of it even in simpler terms and summarize it this way. Where are we going in the next 3 years? What do I want this company, this business that I own and run to look like in the next 3 years? What do I want my team to look like? Who are my customers? How am I serving them? What do we want to be known for as a company? What do we want to stand for as a company? What are the most important values in this company? I think all of these things are like the simplest, easiest building blocks of putting together a vision. I love the exercise from the book Double Double by Cameron Harold. He also pulled this out. He has a second book called The Vivid Vision. He originally called it the Painted Picture Exercise. I talked about this in the Fired Up and Focused Challenge. I wrote about it in my Fired Up and Focused book and gave him credit there. But if you look up Painted Picture or Vivid Vision by Cameron Harold, it is an amazing exercise to help you really press pause, step out of your day-to-day, and think a little bit big picture about where you are headed. And this is going to change over time, but it does at least give you something that you can align the team around, you can rally the team around. The mission piece, again, what do we stand for? If you listen to any of my episodes, you know that I have a big mission to help more women entrepreneurs to escape the entrepreneurial poverty of time, energy, and money, not just so that they can have the financial outcome, but so that we can truly make the world a better place. Because when more women are in charge, the research shows when more women are in charge, when there's more women in leadership, when women have more money, there is a dramatic ripple effect that directly impacts our communities, that directly impacts our children, that directly impacts all the causes that I know so many of us care about. So I want to see more women in leadership succeed and thrive and have the resources to do the work that they're here to do. And the way that I'm doing that is through entrepreneurship and small business. So these things, the vision and the mission, they really become like the latitude and longitude to help you chart your course and then lead your team there. The next thing the CEO is responsible for is the culture. If you are a company of one, this can feel really silly. You're just you, right? But as you start to bring more and more people on, it becomes more and more important that they all know your values as an organization, that everyone is on the same page. In fact, your culture can become a massive part that differentiates your brand and your brand experience. So this is something you want to have defined for yourself and your company. One of the values that I've had since the moment I started my business was life before business. I've been in situations where it felt like it didn't matter what was going on in my life, my work had to come first. And I have seen this play out for so many people in so many organizations that become toxic. Women who go into labor with their cell phones in hand typing out emails because they're worried that something had to get done. Even when they're in labor, they're about to go through this major life transformative moment. And I've been through this experience working for companies where it was totally normal for them to feel like you should be on call 24/7. This dates me, but I used to have a BlackBerry when I was in consulting. 2005, 2006, 2007, those dang BlackBerries came out, and I swear it caused me to have so many panic attacks. I never got away from my email. I felt like I had to be on call all the time, and it was exhausting. So for me, life comes before business is a really important value. It's part of our culture. And in our business, it means not only do we have clear office hours for myself and for the company, but it means that we are following through with those. We aren't just saying we don't work weekends. You won't see me sending weekend emails. You won't see me responding to questions in different Facebook or social media. You won't see me getting my work done on weekends because I don't work on weekends. And I don't expect any of my team to either. That is not the expectation, right? So if they don't want to work on weekends, we're not going to make them work on weekends. Some of them are independent contractors. So that's why I have to say if they don't want to work on weekends. I do have some people who actually like to work on the weekends, especially if their life has gotten busy during the week and they use the weekends as a chance to catch up. But we don't set the expectation that they have to put their life on pause to handle anything in our business. Our business is not an emergency and it shouldn't be their number one priority. Their life should be their number one priority. And I encourage my team to make sure that if something is happening in their life, they need to just let us know. Maybe not, they don't have to tell us the details, but just give us a heads up. Like, hey, I've got something going on. I need to ask for some support. Great. We are here for you. And I do the same as well. This was huge when I had to step in and take care of more of my mom's care and manage her nursing and all of that. Like, I could just be, hey guys, something's come up. I got to go take care of my mom. Just want to give you a heads up. I'll be back in probably tomorrow to check in. So they know if they have an emergency, we've got their back. If they're traveling or celebrating their kid graduating, or they want to take some time off for a fun celebration or a birthday, or they have a major health challenge or a surgery that they need to take time off for, like, we are here to support them. So we have to lead by example with this, because I feel like this is the opposite of what a lot of cultures do in business. A lot of times it's, you know, I'm going to say one thing, but do another. And when you say one thing, but do another, your team might hear you say, oh, we want you to have work-life balance, but they see you grinding it out all the time. They're going to think that's what they have to do as well. So it's really, really important that we lead by example, that this is part of the fabric of the business you are building, and that everyone who works for you or everyone who works with you, your clients, who signs up for one of your products, programs, or services, that they understand the values and the culture of working with you, right? And the life before business is one of our examples. I mean, there's so many other ways we build culture in our company. The third part of a traditional CEO role is going to be around creating the strategic plan. This is the plan of how you are going to get where you are going. Now, businesses are all different. In a huge Fortune 500 company, the CEO is not actually sitting down and creating the strategic plan themselves. They probably have an entire team of C-suite executives who are coming together to figure out what that strategic plan is going to be. But at the end of the day, the CEO is the one who puts their stamp of approval on it, who is committing to it and communicating that strategic plan for everyone else in the company. So we're setting the vision. We're telling everyone the latitude, the longitude, where we are going. We're telling them how we are going to be getting there. And we're telling them what we are doing to get there, right? So that's vision, mission, culture, strategic plan. The strategic plan, again, depending on the size and scale of your business, the bigger your business, the more employees, the more directors, the more executives you're going to be handling the nitty-gritty stuff, they're going to be doing that. But in a smaller company like ours, like if you have a smaller team, you only have a few people on your team or less than a few dozen people on your team, let's just say less than 50. If you have less than 50 people on your team, then you are the one who is probably coming up with the specifics of the strategic plan, what the milestones are to get there, what kind of short-term goals are getting you to the long-term goals. And that's a huge part of your role as CEO. That's why I'm so passionate about hosting quarterly CEO retreats. It's why we've built the CEO retreats into the CEO collective, because every quarter we want to be helping these CEOs of small businesses learning how to set these strategic plans in place, how to operationalize that. It's why we talk about having a weekly CEO date so that the strategic planning isn't just happening once a year or once a quarter. It's happening every single week to make sure we're consistently moving forward. So far in the traditional role of CEO, we've talked about mission and vision, values and culture, strategic plan. Now, the two other things I want to talk about in this role is team. You're in charge of leading the team. Now, in a bigger organization, you're really focused on helping a layer of management who are then managing all of the different people on your team. If you look at an org chart for a big company, this is why you see layers and layers and layers of management and individual employees doing different specific tasks. So at that point, in a much bigger company, the only people who are coming to the CEO are like the chief marketing officer, the chief financial officer, all of the C-suite executives. But if you have a smaller organization, you don't have as many layers of management. You really don't need as many layers of management. So there's not as many levels of management, which means more people are coming to you from different areas of the business. So in my business, again, small but mighty team. I think we have about 15 or 16 people who I would consider on our core team. And my right hand is Amber. She's been my director of operations since 2011. and she's been with me for a really long time. So when I'm leading my team, what it really means is Amber and I are communicating the most regularly. And then Amber is the person who then goes and manages the majority of the rest of the team. Everyone else doesn't need to talk to me as frequently as they talk to Amber, because I've got other big things on my to-do list as the CEO of the company. But she really serves as the person who can make sure everyone on the team is doing what they need to do, that kind of all the trains are running on time, right? She's the managing the day-to-day director of operations, where I'm focused on more of the big picture growth. She's focused on maintaining what we have. I'm focused on growing what is next. So if you don't have a number two on your team, if you don't have, you might hear this called a director of operations, an operations manager, a business manager, a integrator, any of those, they're all kind of different ways to say the same thing. Then you are the person that is responsible for managing everything. And this is something I do warn, you have to be careful about this. Once you go beyond 5 to 8 team members, you need someone who can become the go-to, or else you spend all of your time managing other people instead of growing the business. And because we're entrepreneurs and not corporate CEOs, we have to do things a little differently, right? Our roles are different. We can't spend all of our time just managing people. We have to lead the team, big picture, make sure the team's fired up, make sure they're excited, they're on the same page, communicate the mission, vision, values, strategic plan, all of that. But we need someone else to be day-to-day kind of managing everybody. And as you get to the point where your team has 5 to 8 people on it, you may need that additional support of a right hand who can step in and manage the team. Okay, the final piece that is the more traditional definition of a CEO is the decision maker. And this is one of the hardest parts about being the CEO, because when it comes down to it, you have to decide. You have to decide if you're going to invest a lot of money into a new marketing strategy. You have to decide if you're going to invest a lot of money into hiring and training a team member. You have to decide if you're going to invest a lot of money to attend a conference or sign up for a mastermind or go get some additional training for yourself or someone on the team. You have to make those calls. And those decisions are big decisions. So you are always deciding, where are you deploying the resources, time, energy, and money in your business to continue getting the results and continue going after the goals that you've set? And that includes where you're spending the money. And this can be scary a little bit, because sometimes it feels like, well, what if I invest this money in this area and I don't get an ROI? What if I go to this conference and it's going to cost me $5,000 to go to this conference and I don't get a return on that? Can I afford to not get a return on that? What if I invest this and I feel like I chose wrong? These are hard decisions. And we all will make wrong decisions. We all will spend money or time or energy on something that ends up not being the right thing. That's okay. Not all decisions are going to be the right decisions. We are going to make mistakes. We are going to learn and grow from those mistakes. The good news is, once you start accepting that you are the decision maker, you get better at making those decisions with more and more practice. You learn what you need. You get better at prioritizing. You get better at discerning what your business needs. You get better at making the big calls. You also need to make some big, huge key decisions, right? Like, are you going to market your business this way or that? Are you going to offer this program or that? Are you going to kill a product or program or service that you no longer want to deliver? Do you need to rebrand your business? These are big decisions that are often time intensive. They can be expensive. They can also feel really overwhelming. And at the end of the day, you can't crowdsource these decisions. That's the most important thing. You as a CEO, you can get feedback and support and maybe even some advice from people, but you can't outsource the decision making. If you are going into a Facebook group and posting for someone to make a decision for you, it is really easy to get a bad piece of advice from someone who does not know you, who does not know your business, who does not know what you actually have going on. So something to think about is, most big CEOs, big being like Fortune 500 CEOs, large organizations, they have a board of directors, a board of advisors, a group they go to when they need to make those big decisions. And these are the people who understand them and their business and their mission and their vision and their values and their culture, so they can go to those people and say, here's where I'm stuck. I could use some support or advice or feedback or brainstorming. And then they can make a decision based on an informed place, as opposed to crowdsourcing from random strangers on the internet, which obviously you can tell I am not a huge fan of. Okay, so those are the core parts of a job description for a more traditional CEO. And yes, we are responsible for those in our businesses. So mission, vision, values, culture, strategic planning, managing, leading that team, and making the big decisions along the way. That's a full-time job right there. That is a lot of responsibility. But as entrepreneurs, we have an additional challenge because we're not just CEOs, we're entrepreneurial CEOs of small but mighty businesses. And when I say small business, it has nothing to do with how much revenue you do or don't make. Generally, it has to do with the fact that we're not leading teams of hundreds of people. Most of our businesses, again, have small but mighty teams. And we are still responsible for doing specific things in our business. So when we don't have layers and layers and layers in our organizational chart, we don't have huge hierarchies, we don't have tons of managers in our businesses because, again, we are running lean businesses. How do we make sure that we are handling our role as CEO and doing the things that only we can do to continue to grow our business? For a lot of people in this community who have been following along, listening to Promote Yourself to CEO, who connect with me, who work with us inside of the CEO Collective, I know that most of our audience is service-based business owners, coaches, consultants, creative business owners. I know that we have a lot of expert-based businesses here, people who have years of training and education under their belt, who have years of expertise working with people. So what does that mean when we are looking at our role as CEO of our businesses? How do we make sure that we aren't spending our time and energy in things that are going to actually move us backwards, right? How do we make sure we're not becoming a bottleneck? How do we make sure we can grow our support system, grow our team, grow how many people we can serve without getting lost in the weeds? So I think we have to ask ourselves some really key questions to define your role as the entrepreneurial CEO. We need to handle those big things we just talked about, the traditional CEO role. But as entrepreneurs, we also have to be clear about where we are spending our time, our energy, and our attention. Because honestly, we are still probably responsible for doing some of the things in the business that have to get done. If we don't do them, we slow down the team, we slow down the business. So there's one part of it. We're responsible for implementing some areas, but we also don't want to become the bottleneck. And this happens so often when entrepreneurs start hiring team to take tasks off their plate and they put that task onto the plate of their team. But when they don't redefine the role for themselves, they don't have clarity on where their time and energy now should be going. It has changed. They end up becoming the bottleneck. They end up micromanaging. They end up slowing things down. So let's get clear. Let's spend some time getting clear around where we now need to put our time, energy, and attention so that we continue to be focused on generating results in our business, generating growth for our business. Here are some questions I ask myself, and I encourage you to ask yourself these, not just listening to this episode, but I really want you to journal them. Sit down and think about this. This will save you and your team so much time and energy and angst trying to figure out how to not step on each other's toes and how to stay in your own lane, right? So the first question I ask myself is, where do you provide the most value to your business? And when I say the most value, this is where you are doing your highest and your best level work. This is the work that you are uniquely qualified or experienced or credentialed to offer. This is the work that cannot easily be outsourced or trained or taught because you would have to download your brain to somebody else, right? So this can become a trick question. or it feels like a trick question, because a lot of times as entrepreneurs, we had to get good at lots of things. We had to learn lots of things in order to get our businesses up and running and growing. And it can be very easy to default into, well, I'm really good at that now. I don't need to outsource it. It'll take too long to teach somebody how to do it the way I like to get it done. I don't want to pay to have somebody else do that when it doesn't take me that long. I don't want to pay for an additional tool or whatever. These are the things, these are the mindsets that will hold you back in your business. I can tell you, my highest and best use of my time, energy, and attention is not scheduling social media. My highest and best use of my time, energy, attention, all my resources, all my brain power, all my creativity is not best spent managing my calendar or responding to all the questions in the inbox or double checking on billing and invoices and accounts receivable. Those are things other people can do in my business. That is not something that only I can do, right? So you really have to think about this. Where can you not as easily outsource? Chances are, again, it's tied to your experience and your expertise. Where could you just not download your brain into somebody else so that they could do it for you? So I can create amazing content so easily. This is my zone of genius. I can create amazing content and share my expertise. I can work closely with our clients. I can give personal support to the clients in my group program. I can go out there and make the connections that grow my network, that help me to continue to get more opportunities to grow my business. I can speak, I can do interviews, I can think big picture strategy for my business. So I want you to do a quick brain dump. What are the activities you do that provide the highest value to your business? And if you're having a really hard time with this, then maybe you need to do a time audit and actually sit down, do a time audit for a couple weeks, and then highlight the things that only you can do that are your zone of genius that you cannot outsource as easily, right? Those are the things you want to start paying attention to. Next, out of that list we just came up with, what of these activities drive results for your business? Now, this is a little bit of a trickier question, because we have come up with the list of things we know adds value to our business, or we're hoping this adds value to our business. But now we actually need to validate the specifics of what brings in clients, what brings in business, what brings in opportunities. This is where we need to tune in. We need to tune in and pay attention to the activities that directly lead to clients, to the activities that directly lead to sales, to the activities that directly lead to new opportunities. It is really easy to believe that just because you're posting on social media every day that you're getting clients from social media, but that may not be true. This is why we have to look at data. One of the exercises I give a lot of my clients is to write down their last 10 clients and then figure out where did those 10 clients come from. If you don't know where your clients are coming from, then chances are you are doing a lot of guesswork in your business. You're wasting a lot of time, energy, and resources. You have to know where your clients are coming from. You can ask them when they're signing on to work with you. Ask them in their intake form. Ask them prior to the sales call. Go back into your data. I mean, we can actually track people who have been on our email list and pay attention to how did they join our email list? When did they become a client? How long did it take from them joining the email list to become a client? What happened there? You need to know where your clients are coming from, because if you don't have that clarity, you will spend a lot of effort thinking you know, and then spending time and energy in areas that don't drive results. So I often give this exercise of looking at the last 10 clients or even the last 25 clients, and people are always surprised. They come back to me and they're like, oh my God, I spend so much time stressing out over creating content for social media, but most of my people are coming from referrals. Yeah, then we don't even need to worry about social media as much. So we need to get more strategic about what drives results in your business. Okay. And if you don't know, again, do that last 10 clients exercise. The final big question is, what is your zone of genius? Your zone of genius is the work that it's not just where you provide the most value, right? This is the work that often it comes so easily to you. This is where you can get into a flow state so effortlessly, where you can just make things happen without having to work so hard. This is why I love the StrengthsFinder test. This is why I love anything that gives me insight into what I uniquely have that other people don't naturally have. If you don't know what your zone of genius is, it's really easy to get trapped in your zone of excellence. And again, a lot of entrepreneurs have a lot of things we can do really well. We've had to learn how to do them really, really well. But there's probably some part of what you do where you are above and beyond what the average person can do in that area. The easiest way to think of this for me is, what comes easily to me that I am surprised about when other people tell me it does not come as easily for them? So a great example of this, I recently hired a video team because of the TikTok experiment we're running. I've shared about that on the podcast before. And they had never done content this way. They'd never recorded short form content. They never worked with me before. So we really didn't know what we were getting into there. But afterwards, they told me in 3.5 hours, we had recorded almost 60 videos that we would then drip out onto TikTok. And they said, we were a little nervous because most of the people who hire us to record videos for their businesses really struggle to articulate what they're trying to say. They really struggle to create captivating content. But you just knocked it out of the park. Like everything that we created, we had a list of topics and they would just ask me a question. I would give them a reply. We made all of those videos in single takes. It was just so easy. And they were like, this is your zone of genius. You need to do this more and more and more. And it's really easy for me to go, oh, it's just my zone of excellence because I'm interviewed all the time. I have a lot of experience under my belt giving quick responses. I've had a podcast for over a decade. So that should just be my zone of excellence, right? No, it is actually one of my zones of genius because it comes so easily and effortlessly to me. So think about that. I have another client who, when I look at her zone of genius, it is all in connecting and relationships. She can't outsource that. Like the connections she has with her clients and the way they feel connected to her, that's something she just can't outsource. She is one of those high relator people. Everything in her StrengthsFinder is around relationships. And so I was like, that's just something we can't outsource. And if we put your time and energy anywhere, it needs to be in building those relationships. So think about, what is your true zone of genius? So for me, when I answer all these questions, when I'm asking myself, where do I provide the most value? What drives growth? And what is my zone of genius? I am looking for the intersection of those three, right? Like if it's a Venn diagram, I'm looking for the sweet spot right in the middle. And this is where I'm going to spend my time and energy throughout the week. I'm going to focus on creating content because it is my zone of genius. It drives results. It is one of the highest value tasks I can do. I'm going to focus on my clients because I can't really always teach other people. I can teach them the frameworks of strategy that I know, but there's a lot that just comes because of so many years of experience and expertise and connections. If I want to grow my business and I know connections are the way to get there, I can't outsource that. So I want you to ask yourself those specific questions. And what drives results? Where is your highest and best value in your business? And what is your true zone of genius? And then you can use that insight to help you figure out where you should be putting your time, energy, effort, resources, attention. Okay. So looking at mine, again, content, clients, connection, I'll share a little bit more about what that means for me and how that shows up in my week, how that shows up in what I do every single week, every single month. So I mentioned that content is a big piece of it. Now, this could be free or paid content. So this could be me creating content for the Promote Yourself to CEO podcast. I produce at least 50 episodes a year. That's quite a lot. And we have 4 years. There's hundreds of episodes on this podcast. I also am interviewed on a regular basis. So I usually do anywhere from 4 to 6 interviews a month on podcasts. I've also been creating content for TikTok as a recent experiment. Again, I'm still in the middle of that experiment, but it has kind of checked all the boxes as far as what is in my zone of genius, what drives results, and what is my highest and best value, getting my message out into the world. So content is definitely something that I am spending a lot of time and energy doing. I can't really outsource this to anyone else on my team, right? Like, they're not going to be able to do what I do in the way that I do it. However, that doesn't mean that I need to be the person to edit the content. That doesn't mean I need to be the person to upload the content or publish the content or write the show notes for the content. I can get fully supported with all the other things. Same with any paid content that I might create. So if I'm creating content for the CEO Collective, my highest and best use of time is creating the content. It's not necessarily designing the slide deck or editing the video or turning the thing that I recorded into video, audio, and transcript or whatever, right? Those parts can be outsourced. But what is important is me putting my effort behind the creation of the content. So the next thing that I might spend some time, energy, and resources on is connection. Connection is a little different than creating content, right? Connection is my alternate word for networking, because I know a lot of us are kind of have some PTSD around networking. But I know that whenever I make an effort to truly connect with people, whenever I get out of my office, whenever I get out of my little entrepreneurial bubble, when I put myself in rooms where I don't know those people, amazing things happen. Those connections help me to meet new people who are going to invite me on their podcast or who could potentially introduce me to somebody that will have a speaking opportunity for me. Like, I don't always know where the connection is going to play out in the future, but I do know that almost every major opportunity that's ever come into my life, into my business, has been because of my connections, because I spend time cultivating those connections and community. So how do I spend time there? I sign up for events to attend. I'm going to attend an event actually coming up at the end of June. I'm going to the ConvertKit conference. And then in the fall, I'm going to She Podcast Live. And I might not even speak at, well, I'm not speaking at the one in June. I'm speaking at the one coming up in the fall. But I know that when I get at a table with people and start talking to them, amazing things will happen. I know that I'll get up to this conference and there will be people there who I've known online or who I've maybe even met in person a couple times. And I can solidify those relationships and build on those relationships. I also spend a lot of time connecting on social media. So I don't post a ton. You're not going to see me posting like multiple times a day. I'm not here to be a social media influencer, quote unquote. But I do spend a lot of time connecting, which means I'm checking out other people's content. I'm messaging with people. I'm commenting on their content. I'm engaging with their content. And to me, that is so important. That's the social part of social media. Social media is not just a one-way channel to dump your content on and then not engage with anybody else. You have to engage with people. So I actually spend a lot of time. I follow almost all of my clients if they're on social media. I follow a lot of the people in my network, and I'm regularly connecting with all of those people. I make connections with people on a regular basis, almost every week. In fact, this is one of the questions in my CEO planner is like, who did you connect with? Who do you want to connect with next week? Who can you help? And that's the weekly wrap-up page in the CEO planner. But I'm regularly connecting people and sending introductions to people. I love helping people make connections. And when I ask myself that question, who can I connect this week? It always comes back to me, right? Like, when you put good out, good always comes back, I feel. So I hope that's helpful to think about, you know, connection being a huge part of your week. It could be as simple as making some introductions for people or meeting up with people or getting out of your office. The final thing that I am focused on is clients. And you might be surprised. A lot of people often are, because I do not work one-on-one with many people. I will have a few people one-on-one. You can't find out anything about how to work with me one-on-one currently. It is not a public-facing offer. So I do have a few people. Most of the people who work with me, though, are working with me through the CEO Collective, are coming into the CEO Retreat. And every single time I get a chance to get to know a new client, When they sign up to work with us and they send in their intake form, the first things I start doing is looking at their business. I'm reading their intake form. I'm checking out their website. I'm following them on social media. I'm subscribing to their email. I have an email just for my clients' email newsletters. And that's because I really take the role of being their mentor very seriously. I'm looking at everything they bring to the CEO Collective, all the questions they bring, all the challenges they bring. I am on their board of advisors. I am here to make sure they're not just crowdsourcing information and getting like a one-size-fits-all answer. I know they invested in working with us, and I'm going to invest the time and energy and truly getting under the hood of their business and understanding what's going on for them so that I can be giving them support and feedback and everything in a more, you know, I actually know who you are and know what your business is about. And so we've made sure not only is that part of what I do, but that's part of our whole customer experience process. We have these high touch check-ins. We have these high touch checkpoints, everything from how we onboard to how we wrap up to how we send little bonuses or gifts in the mail, how we check in when we notice people aren't active. Like, those are the things that are important to me. And because we put our time and energy and effort there, it makes our clients feel taken care of. And that is so incredibly important. Clients, content, connections. Those are my most essential task areas as an entrepreneurial CEO, plus the other core tasks that we started off this episode talking about. All of this is where I'm spending my time and energy. Now, how do I divide up my time between all of these things? Well, honestly, most of the more traditional CEO things, that all happens for me on Monday mornings and my CEO date. That's why I am such an evangelist for the idea of a CEO date. Mondays are my CEO time. I have my CEO date. I have my team meeting. I'm looking at high-level CEO tasks. I will often take myself out of my day-to-day business to work on that CEO level work, right? I will go book myself in a hotel for a couple nights to have some big picture thinking time. I will go on a solo retreat or have my team come on a retreat with me to think about that big picture time. But throughout most weeks, the other three core things, content, clients, and connections, that's happening Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and there's my work week. Friday's kind of my wrap up. So that helps me stay on track. It helps me make sure that we are spending the right amount of time on each of these core areas where I can provide the highest and best value to my business, where I can spend my time and energy on the things that actually grow my business, where I can spend my time and energy on the things that truly make the impact that I'm looking to make. So your challenge, if you choose to accept it, is to define your role, because your zone of genius is going to be different from mine. What provides the most value to your business is going to be different from mine. We all are different. We all have different strengths. We all have different areas of expertise. So please don't think that just because I said my most important things are client connections and content, that those are your most important things. You might have something completely different. Your strengths are probably some other magical mixture of things that I don't have access to. So I really want you to sit down and be honest with yourself, look through how you're spending your time and energy, look through what gets results for your business, and think about those three essential task areas that you need to be devoting most of your week to. And if you want to go for extra credit in this challenge, write your full job description. Write your job description for yourself as if you are interviewing potential CEOs for the company you are building. What does that look like? If you want a CEO to run your business, what do you want to make sure that they are on top of, that they're in charge of, that they're taking ownership for? If you love this episode, I want to hear from you. Share with me what your three core CEO tasks are. Connect with me over on Instagram or on TikTok. Those are the two places I am spending the most time these days. But I cannot wait to hear how this episode helped you out in getting more clarity on where you should be spending your time, your energy, and your attention.